All right, it's a rat with wings.
Yes, exactly.
All right, so we will have a bat story to tell later. We'll find out what Al Dukes thinks he could do to Tiki Barber as well. We'll mix in a lot of fun. Jazz Chisholm is moving to second base. Jesse Winker is back. Don't get me wrong, we are going to get into plenty of baseball today. But this hour specifically and this afternoon is about the New York Knicks as they get set to introduce Mike Brown as their newest head coach. And of course, we're going to have many questions about the questions that get asked to Mike Brown. So the press conference is scheduled to start in about a half an hour or so. We're going to dip in, listen in, see what Mike Brown has to say. But Tiki, as it stands right now, for me, I think there's a couple things I want to ask to Mike Brown and I want to see how he answers. First and foremost, you're taking this job with a lot of pressure. Do you feel like this is a championship or bust kind of situation?
Well, he can't say yes to that.
I know, but I want to see how he answers that.
It's definitely going to be asked because they were in Eastern Conference Finals last year. But it's a question you want to avoid or at least answer as tactfully as possible. Because if you say yes, then at some point you go on a 3-4-5-game losing streak, whatever it may be. You just don't look the part this next season. People are going to say, yeah, well, he's not the guy. Fire him.
Right.
So you can't answer. You got to answer that very tactfully if you're Mike Brown. But the thing that I'm most interested in, and obviously in that question, but in others as well, is how does he sound? Like I can't. Like I know we've seen Mike Brown. We've heard him from his days in Cleveland and Sacramento. But it was not here. It wasn't in New York. And so you know, in New York, as we've said many times, nobody else talks.
Right.
James Dolan does not talk. Leon Rose does not talk. World Wide West does not talk. Nobody talks. The only person who talks are, well, the players other than them, is Mike Brown for the organization, or it's going to be. And so how he sounds and handles the media, which, let's face it, it's annoying in New York.
Right.
The media just asks questions even if they're not trying to be, they are. And so when something goes a little bit awry or askew, you're going to get drilled on that question. And how you respond to it is going to determine how we perceive you and then ultimately how we perceive the team. So I'm actually more interested in not necessarily the content of what he says, even though that's important too, but really like how he says it, like how he presents. Think about the Aaron Glenn. When Aaron Glenn first took over with the Jets, you could tell from jump it was like, y'all don't F with me, right? I'm laying down law for how this is going to go on. If you're going to come incorrect with me, then you're getting it right back.
We're the freaking New York Jets.
Right. So how he responds to New York media is really interesting to me because we've seen head coaches in this town lose that press conference and never, ever gain it back.
Bingo. You walked me right into it. I wasn't even actually thinking this, Tiki. This was a great point. I have been fortunate enough to work behind the scenes and go overwork the national side where you were. We worked CBS Sports Radio for many years. I have been out in that newsroom for many a New York coach press conference, manager press conference.
Right.
And you always, always remember the negative ones.
Yes.
Do I remember what Aaron Boone's press conference sounded like? I don't.
I don't at all.
I don't remember what Carlos Mendoza's press conference sounded like. I don't remember what Tom Thibodeau's press conference, but I remember that.
I don't remember Dave's either.
I really don't either, but I remember Joe Judge sounding like a militant, right? I remember Ben McAdoo's suit. I remember Adam Gase's eyes darting all over the place.
No doubt.
Remember Mickey Callaway kind of sounding like an idiot as well. Like, we have lived through some of these press conferences, and the reason I bring up those guys is, did any of them last year? So not that a press conference determines whether you will be a great head coach or manager in this town or not, but it already sets in motion if you leave a negative taste in that first impression.
No doubt.
What people think of you, and that gets awfully hard to recover from in this town. It sucks.
But it's the reality. Because if it's bad, you remember it.
Yes.
And even if it has nothing to do with his coaching ability at all, we're going to judge his coaching decisions based off the first and negative impression that we got. If it's bad.
Yeah, if it's bad.
If it's good, you kind of just like, all right, whatever. It just goes by the wayside. But if it's bad, it gets related to everything that's bad associated with the team.
Tommy, you're Mr. Nick. You're positive Tommy. What are you looking to hear from Mike Brown today?
I think we'll use Adam Gase as the Mona Lisa of bad press conferences. Because he literally looked he looked like he was being held hostage, which I guess when you're the Jets head coach, it's kind of fitting. But
right.
He just, the darting of the eyes. Mike Brown, this is not his first rodeo. He's used to this. He worked in L.A. He worked in Cleveland with LeBron. So I don't think he's going to be intimidated by the New York media. But what I'm looking for as a Knick fan, starting lineup changes. Is he going to go with Mitch and Kat in the starting lineup?
He's not going to tell you that today.
Josh Hart on the bench. But even if you could gauge Teak, it's almost like, you know, raising in poker. I want to see how you react to it. You may not tell me your cards, but I just want to get a tell.
I'll let you continue, but I think a different way to approach that would be, we talked about Tom Thibodeau at nauseam for the last couple of years about the minutes usage and not going deep into the bench. And we clearly see by the Knicks' moves this offseason, they're trying to deepen that bench. What, maybe not what the starting lineup looks like, but how are you going to handle starters' minutes, so to speak, and how deep will this team be?
Yeah, that was more of my questions. Developing the younger players, playing the bench more minutes, getting more out of, or how do you plan on getting more out of Kat and JB offensively, especially working together, their chemistry. And look, listen, it's the elephant in the room, Rick Brunson, who has been at least perceptually demoted here. What do you think of Rick Brunson, his role on the team, working with Rick Brunson? Those are the questions. Maybe even something on Mikal, getting him a little bit more unlocked offensively. Maybe just overall the team, like getting, because Mike Brown's an offensive mind. How do you plan on getting this team to be better and more efficient offensively?
Yeah, and you brought up, obviously, Mikal Bridges and going through everything in rotation. Look, this is a guy that has worked under Greg Popovich. He's worked, like you said, with LeBron in Cleveland. He was the guy, people forget this, that had to grab Meta World Peace out of the crowd in the Malice at the Palace and pull down. Like, he has so much experience dealing with all the ebbs and flows, whatever you want to say, under coaches, with stars, you know, growing young player. You know, Bridges, you want to get the most out of him. What he did in Sacramento for that year was incredible, too. He has so many life experiences, and I wonder if he leans on any of those in the press conferences, because I think it's very easy for anybody to look at Mike Brown being hired and be uninspired by it, even though we all like it. But the truth is, every time you get a new opportunity in the coaching world, you're supposed to learn from your past experiences. And he has a Forrest Gump-like resume all over the league with these experiences. And maybe we haven't seen the best of Mike Brown as a head coach, and that's what he brings to the New York Knicks now.
Yeah, he's really run the gamut as far as being in L.A. with Kobe, being in Cleveland with a young LeBron, being an assistant with the Warriors and winning a lot of championships there. And then getting the Kings back to the playoffs for the first time in like 20-something years with a young team that was mainly an offensive team. So I don't think there's anything that could be thrown at Mike Brown that he hasn't experienced throughout his coaching career. He's seasoned. He's dealt with stars. He's dealt with tough media. I don't think there's anything that he can't deal with. And I think that just automatically, if you want to go the route of, hey, some of these players weren't happy with Tibbs because of the minutes or maybe because of the roles on their team, you're going to have that honeymoon phase right out of the gate. Mike Brown's going to be the most popular guy in the room.
I hope he shuts that down. I hope he shuts down the what happened before out just immediately, because it doesn't matter. And as soon as you get into the judging, he's going to get asked it. But as soon as you get into the judging of the guy that preceded you, you kind of lose the battle. Because you're not talking about anything going forward. You're talking about the past, which is inaccessible to you and you had no influence over. So I think if Mike Brown is smart, and I know he is, it's got to be driving forward. It's got to be what I'm bringing, what I'm doing, and has nothing to do with the history that this team just went through with a pretty damn good head coach in Tom Thibodeau. We as fans can pine and talk and opine about it all we want, but him as the head coach, it can't enter his consciousness at all.
Now, we could talk about not looking to lean into the past, but there is an element that will be discussed that Stephon Bondy reported on earlier. I heard Sal and BT talking about it as well, which is, it's speculative at this point, but the idea that Brown is going to be given full autonomy to hire his lead assistant coach on the bench, which would mean a lessening of a role for Rick Brunson within the New York Knicks, which would also, I guess, kind of help alleviate what may have been some problems within that locker room last year, where maybe Brunson, being the father of the star player,
had too much real.
That's the thing.
Like, I don't know.
This is what I find so difficult about this, Tiki. Jalen Brunson, from what we can all see, and this is why he got himself in the King debate with King Judge, was the idea of, he's the ultimate captain, the ultimate team player, and it's very hard to feel like anybody in that Knicks locker room could walk away with a bad word about him. But, you know, when your dad, we talked about yesterday with Anthony Volpe's dad defending him from the stands.
Right.
When your dad is a lead assistant coach on the bench, we kind of just accept that, well, everything's good in the Jalen Brunson world. You know what? If Mike Brown's getting hired here and there feels that need that he needs to have a say and not have Rick Brunson undercutting, there has to be at least something there. I'm a big when there's smoke, there's fire.
I think it's also like a really delicate situation for Mike Brown. Because
definitely.
You also don't want to diminish Rick Brunson. Even though he's technically being demoted, you still want him to feel like he's an important part of this.
Absolutely.
Because otherwise, it becomes a bug in Jalen Brunson's head.
Definitely.
And something that not really is not going to have any impact, but it could at some point. Right? Like down the line, you got to think about how relationships matter. And Rick yes. Brunson has one of the longest ones of anybody on this. It's going to be on this staff. And so, and especially with his son being there, you really have to think about how you handle it.
And I'm assuming, based on whenever they talked to Jenkins about this, and obviously bringing Mike Brennan for the second interview, this had to have been a big topic of conversation. How do you handle, we're not going to get rid of Rick Brunson. Mm-hmm. What would you like to do here? What's the dance you want to play here? And I'm also going to respect Jalen Brunson a little more to think he's going to be offended in any way by a sliding back of his father as the assistant coach.
It's the business.
It's the business. And I think Jalen Brunson gets the business of that as well. I don't think it's going to be a massive deal. The only thing I would say is, if Rick Brunson is going to be demoted in any way but remain a coach, are you better off just kind of cutting ties now and having that conversation with Jalen Brunson? Like, look, there's a new coach, a new regime. What do you want to do here? Or is the reason he's not being completely taken off the bench because you don't want to alienate your star?
Right. I don't think you can move on from him. Reassign him. Whatever. I don't know what the word is. Like, I think you just have to let it play out. And maybe this happens a year from now.
Yeah,
right?
Okay.
Maybe the Rick Brunson exit happens in more saving of a face manner.
A long goodbye. Give him whatever his role is this year.
Right. And so it's not an immediate goodbye where it feels personal. Even though it's not. It's just the business of the game and probably the prudent thing to do if you're Mike Brown. Get your staff the way you want it.
Sure.
If Rick Brunson is not part of it, then Rick Brunson's not part of it. But because of his son, it is a delicate thing to handle.
I think the demotion of Rick Brunson is more perception than it is reality. I think if he had any kind of stroke or any kind of power or any kind of say, he still has that. I just think that the organization, probably a Leon Rose, maybe even a James Dolan, said, you know what? Perceptionally, everybody thinks Rick Brunson is sort of pulling the strings, maybe got Tibbs fired. I'm just speculating. And we're bringing in a new coach, even though he's a seasoned head coach. We don't want to cut his legs out from under him as far as media, where you have to answer the questions. So we'll say, all right, we're bringing in another guy. Brunson loses a little bit of stroke, but it's more perception than it is reality. And as far as whether or not it's reality, I think it dates back to the stuff that happened in the preseason before the season started, which was Dante DiVincenzo.
Yeah.
I'm paraphrasing, mm-hmm. but he was screaming at Brunson. He says he was screaming at Tibbs. This is what happens when you're in charge.
Right. Assuming and daddy be in charge.
Yeah, exactly. And so I think it all started there, kind of went away, but it reared its ugly head later in the year. So I think that's where it kind of all started.
Okay. We all unanimously believe the Mike Brown hire is the right hire for the culture of this team, where this team is at. 888-808-1019. But let me ask you, Tiki, and I will ask Tommy the same exact question. Is there anything you think can be asked in this press conference and or answered in a way in this press conference where you will have any doubts that this is the right hire?
No. No.
No.
I don't
nothing.
Think so. I don't. Well, the reality is, who else was going to take this job?
That's
that
a good
was
point.
Going to be better?
That's a good point. You have to think
Jenkins
of that net
maybe.
Filter.
Maybe Taylor Jenkins. Maybe that's it. Just because he's young and he's, I don't know, had success in
Memphis
and, you know, he had a young team, had a dealt with a superstar there, right? So maybe you would say Jenkins, but he didn't get to the second interview. So what does that even tell you? So I don't think there was a better coach that they could have hired other than the unknown, right?
True.
Who is this guy? The Jordy Fernandez of the world, right? Who the heck is this guy? I have no idea who he is. Oh, he turns out he's a fantastic coach. But the Knicks weren't in a position to do that. They weren't in a position to hire a maybe. They had to hire somebody who had experience, who had success, not the ultimate success, obviously, but someone who is respected, that is going to understand the relationships in a locker room, is going to understand how to manage personalities in that locker room. And he's been around for so long with superstar teams that I think he knows what he's doing, regardless of the kind of locker room that he's going to have with the New York Knicks. It's going to be different than the ones he's had before, but I'm not worried about how he's going to manage it because he's done so much in his career already.
Now, you're positive, Tommy.
Yeah.
Is there anything that you feel you could walk away negatively if you hear something or a question answered not the certain way? Is there anything that comes to mind before we hear this press conference?
Not necessarily. Maybe more in the way he answers a question. So I brought up the Adam, but here's the flip side of that. I brought up the Adam Gase press conference.
Well, you're not going to get Mike Brown's eyes darting all
over. He looked like he was being held hostage. But I think back to Joe Judge, who had one of the best press conferences in the history of this town, and he ended up being a total boob.
Right.
He didn't know what he was doing. So you could win a press conference.
Well, that's also because he didn't know what he was doing.
Right. But he knew what he was doing in that press conference.
Yes.
Boy, did he sound like the next great head coach. Boy, like, but it's so memorable how great it was. So I think Mike Brown is a good hire, and if he has a great press conference, it'll only strengthen that. But even if you say the wrong things, doesn't mean you're going to be a bad head coach. So I'm trying to give two ends of the spectrum. There's nothing that he could say at least, you know, 20 minutes before we hear from him that makes me feel like, boy, this was the wrong hire. We'll see when it all, you know, unfoils. But
so we are going to give a listen to Mike Brown when he does, in fact, take the podium at any point here over the course of the next 40 minutes. But get your calls in before the press conference begins. Is there anything you're looking to hear from Mike Brown specifically and your thoughts on a Rick Brunson demotion? 888-808-1019. Evan, still in France. Oui, all the way home. We don't know when he makes the move to Barcelona, but that's happening soon. We haven't seen Enrico. He enjoyed a night free of sports, so that was good. It's Sean, Tiki, Tommy, Rosie here with you along the way. Guess, is this French music, Tiki?
Sounds like it.
Evan, for our update in
cafe
Europe.
Cafe music.
No baseball games last night, so we didn't get that check-in. We did all wake up to a text from Evan in our group chat as we await to hear from Mike Brown. You might be saying, well, what the heck is Evan texting you guys for that? He texted us a tally of how many times we did not call King Aaron Judge by King. Tiki with 4, me with 14.
14?
And Tommy and Rosie with 0. This from this guy, Dan, who checks in on the show. His guy. And let me just say this. If I did this 14 times yesterday, which I don't think I did because I remember calling him King Judge.
I know. But I remember calling him King Judge, too.
Whatever the case may be. Dan, if you're out there, we appreciate your help whenever you come up with good research. I would advise you to do this. Listen to the show, but take 2 weeks off from being Evan's, let's just say, teacher's pet. We don't need the report. I don't need Evan coming back to me owing $300 to some kind of kitty. Take the 2 weeks off. The idea that Evan texted us that this morning, I couldn't believe.
I know it. I couldn't believe it either. And I don't remember it.
I don't remember either. I mean, it's going to be held accountable.
Right.
But come on.
And it was all in the first segment. So I think I'm going to have to go back and audit this.
You should. You should.
I'm serious.
I can't believe it. And if you're Evan, too.
14.
If I was Evan, he just needs to text us. I'd wait till the 2 weeks are up and then present me the evidence. Because then we
so
might.
So it's like 40.
Yes. 40. If it was 14 yesterday, could you imagine?
No, it's true. 2 weeks is going to be 140.
Best news for us is that Mike Brown's speaking today and we're talking less about King Aaron Judge. Tommy, I know you were not happy with the Evan text.
Of course not. Now, let's start from the beginning. Evan was, not even Evan. The Rico Bronya account was emailed this. Why are you checking emails? You're on vacation. We live in a society now where it is hard to disconnect. I understand that.
But right. When I'm on vacation, guys, you're going to think I'm dead.
Right. You will not. When I'm on holiday, you will not hear from me. And if you reach out to me, I will be very mad. It's like the scene in The Hangover where he's leaving. Bradley Cooper's leaving. It's summer vacation. You do not know me. That's how I operate. Evan, just put the phone down. Disconnect. Why are you checking your emails? And Dan, if you're out there, he's basically like the person in court that types out our entire show. He knows how many times you didn't say King in front of Aaron Judge.
Insane. Just absolute insanity. Now, as we get ready to approach, some of you who might be familiar with Mike Brown must be wondering, hey, you guys are positive. How did he keep losing these jobs? What happened? I just want to give you a quick trip down the Mike Brown memory road, okay? 2000 to 2003, he works under Greg Popovich. He also coaches their summer league team. He's, of course, on the Pop staff when they beat the Nets in 2003. So, bam, championship experience right out the gate as an assistant. He then goes and coaches under Rick Carlisle. I would say Popovich, Carlisle, two guys you want to learn under in Indiana. They make that Eastern Conference final. As I said, he was a member of that staff in Indiana with the Malice at the Palace, and he was basically the guy credited with calming Ron Artest down, which, you know, say what you want to say, that is an early sign of a good leader. That scene was insane. If he's part of the reason that finally got calmed down, Not that that makes him coach of the year by any means, but again, that little things like that add up. Okay, he ends up going to Cleveland 2005 to 2010. The LeBron teams can't figure out how to get to the NBA Finals. He ends up getting fired by Dan Gilbert. Now, why does he get fired? Because Dan Gilbert thought by firing Mike Brown, he would, you know, entice LeBron to come yes. back. LeBron bolts anyway. And later on, after joining the Lakers to succeed Phil freaking Jackson, more on why he left there, he ended up getting rehired by Dan Gilbert, who admitted it was a mistake to fire him in the first place.
Because who did he hire right after? Forgetting now. Former Laker. Why am I forgetting his name?
Wasn't Larry Brown.
No, it wasn't Larry Brown. It was a former player.
Byron Scott?
Was it Ty Lue?
No. I think it was.
Was it Byron Scott?
Maybe it was Byron Scott.
Okay.
And he was terrible.
Right. And obviously they were a different team if they lost LeBron. But now imagine being the guy to succeed Phil Jackson with the Lakers. And this is the problem. They had the lockout shortened season. The Lakers end up losing in the second round. The Lakers then have a ridiculous offseason where they add an aging Steve Nash, Dwight Howard coming off the back injury. They already had Kobe. They had Gasol. They had Meta World Peace, who obviously he had a deal with. With that team, Mike Brown lasts just 5 games. Wow. He was the third quickest firing in a season, but it was already an unmitigated disaster. They tried to throw a bunch of lump sum parts, and Mike Brown was basically the reason for it, but made the playoffs right after a Phil Jackson leaving. He ends up going back to Cleveland, as we said. He replaced Byron Scott as the head coach. He was fired for a second time as they had a losing record at that point. Then he goes to the Warriors. Remember with the Warriors, Steve Kerr gets banged up with the back. He ends up being the head coach of that team in an
interim.
The Warriors basically don't miss a boat. He ends up coaching a playoff game when COVID happened with the Warriors. He did a really good job, which earned him another job as a head coach. The Sacramento Kings had not had a playoff appearance for 17 years, was an NBA record. He snaps that, becomes coach of the year. Immediately the next year, they get off to a slow start, and he's fired. I don't know what the hell happened in Sacramento that second year, and that was the last time we saw him as a head coach.
Right.
But for a head coach to dig your franchise out of the doldrums, I mean, we're talking about Jets-like stuff here, 17 right. years, and make the playoffs. Sacramento hasn't been back now since those last 2 years. He did a hell of a job there. I say this to say he has been let go of multiple places and found other jobs, but if you look at all of those stops early on, he helped change franchises around, or at least help them not miss beats,
right.
replacing Phil Jackson, filling in for Kerr, doing what he did with the Kings.
But that doesn't make him great. And I think that's why,
okay.
I think that's why if you have any reservation, it's that. It's has he, without the LeBron Jameses of the world,
right.
or a roster that's already pre-constructed, even though this one is, mm-hmm. let's be fair, what has he actually done as far as developing the players? And why did it take him so long post-firing to get another head coaching job? That's
true.
That's really where some of the doubt comes in. But again, I go back to what I said before. Who was better? Who else?
Right.
Who else would you have? Are you pining for right now? Because you weren't getting Jason Kidd. You weren't getting any of those other names on those lists that they, I don't know, kind of just token asked for permission to chat with. They wanted Jason Kidd, obviously, but
clearly
he wasn't getting let go, or Jason wasn't doing enough to get himself let go from the Dallas Mavericks. So with the guys that are available, who was better? And I think the answer is no one.
And if you look at like what I had mentioned with taking over for Phil and the Cleveland years and everything, the one thing I think you could bank on, and this isn't a great answer to your point of what makes him great or the team great, is that they shouldn't take a step backward with Mike Brown. He clearly has proven when taken over, he could take a roster and steady goes.
Yes.
But can he be a coach that elevates your team and wins a championship, which is exactly what's on the table with championship or bust? We are waiting to hear from Mike Brown. Coverage was set to begin at 2:30, but this is not Tom Coughlin time, clearly, Tiki. Mike Brown not operating on that. They have begun to take some pictures that have been put out on social media. Ironically enough, with the number 25 on a Knicks jersey, he's got that Mikal Bridges number going on, although that's for the year 2025. I wonder if we hear from Leon Rose at all. My guess is they're not going to have Leon Rose saying much today either.
I wouldn't think so. I think it's going to be mostly Mike Brown, because we know that this is going to be the modus operandi going forward.
The what?
The MO.
The MO. Is that what MO stands for?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
The operating method, basically. So we know that's what it's going to be. Like, when you get the job as the head coach for the New York Knicks, your job is to answer every question that ever comes way of the organization.
Right. So when Mike Brown talks, we'll hear from him after he starts to talk. And all right, that was some of what Mike Brown had to say in his introductory press conference. Keep it locked to WFAN throughout the day as we'll be playing clips of what Mike Brown had to say and more after that as well. Tiki, my immediate reaction is twofold. Number one, very careful. It felt as if in that opening statement, Mike Brown had practiced that opening statement a ton of times. He was careful. He was succinct.
Well, he was good because he mentioned his fiance right away.
Right away, which is always clutch. My guess is there are a lot of people who are going to walk away from at least the opening statement part of that going, oh, you know, maybe this was a little uninspiring. But remind you, he wasn't doing the Joe Judge thing there. He was to the point. He understood it. And I thought that last question we heard from Ian Begley was important, too, as far as what you saw from this starting five and what's going forward. And much like Mike Brown is known for, he brought up, yeah, while I love their defensive versatility, he thinks the offense is basically sky's the limit, looking forward to implementing his system
right. And
working with them. So I don't think this has been a disaster press conference by any means.
No.
I think it was very carefully worded, very to the point,
right. And
I think Mike Brown is all about, you know, putting his offense in place with the pieces
well,
in
place. Let's analyze it. It wasn't strong and powerful and listen to me as Aaron Glenn kind of was. I am the force here. I am, by my own example, going to lead this team to success because we're built for this, you know what. That's what Aaron Glenn said. It wasn't that. It was kind of the opposite of that. It was more tamed, toned down, and more to the point. I think he had specific things that he wanted to get across, and he even mentioned some of these things sound cliche-ish, and look, sometimes they are. Athletes, and I know this from being one for as long as I was, you kind of live by the cliche.
Yeah.
It's a way to simplify the obvious things that you need to do to be successful and to win. And you know, the things he pointed out, a lot of hard work, high level of commitment, and then focusing on today, right? You can't skip ahead and just be great. You got to do it at every practice. You got to do it at every shoot around, one day at a time type of thing. But he got to these specific points, which I thought were, when you talk about what kind of culture a coach is going to bring, because ultimately the cerebralness of him is probably going to be the personality of the team. It's almost always this way, right? When you have a guy who's constantly in front of the entire group speaking a certain way, that becomes the personality of the team. And that's either good or bad, however you want to look at it. That just usually is what happens. And when he starts talking about things like sacrifice, so to me that I hear playing hurt, I hear, you know, pushing through fatigue, like
right. All
those things that we know occur to athletes. That's what sacrifice means. And then connectivity, having like a real relationship so that you trust these guys on the court, off the court. You feel like it's not work. It feels like a relationship. And then he talked about the competitive spirit. And I think they already have that. This team is built with some guys who are stars, some who want to be stars, guys who have ridiculous expectations from the fans. And so that competitive spirit, I think, is there. They wouldn't have gotten as far as they did 2 years ago. They wouldn't have gotten to the Eastern Conference Finals last year if they weren't competitive. Because there were many times that we as fans, we were counting them out. Hell, we were counting them out against the Detroit Pistons in round one at some points. And clearly against the Boston Celtics, nobody thought that they were going to find their way through. And they did. That competitive spirit is already there. And then really it becomes the last one he talked about, which is belief. Belief is just, do I see myself being an NBA champion? And that's, to me, the most important one that he's got to speak to this team. Because even if you are a star, even if you're really great like Jalen Brunson, you're the greatest big shooting big in the NBA like Karl-Anthony Towns, you still got to constantly talk belief, right? Because as soon as you let doubt sow itself into your brain, then any failure becomes terminal. And so I liked his message. I'm just now waiting to see how he delivers it to his team and if they start saying the same things.
And I think he also said two important things. Number one, while we talked about earlier, there was no championship or bust mandate addressed, at least to what we listened to. He did say the whole goal here, starting with Mr. Dolan, Leon Rose, to the players and the fans, is to build a sustainable winning culture that produces championships. So he's not shying away from that expectation.
Right.
He mentioned his history of being on benches that have won championships. I think that's important. The other thing that I thought was interesting, because we talked about the whole idea of Rick Brunson and Jalen Brunson and everything, He mentioned Jalen Brunson by name in those first few minutes. Mm-hmm. We did not hear Karl Anthony Towns' name by the in the first few minutes. And that's not a knock on Karl Anthony Towns, but for anybody that might have been thinking, I heard Pete Hoffman was talking about this earlier. We love Pete. The idea of, well, are they really looking at this being the future of Karl Anthony Towns' team as opposed to Jalen Brunson's team? No, no, no. That was made very clear.
Right.
This is about Jalen Brunson, the captain of the Knicks, more so than those other guys, including Karl Anthony Towns, that are the rest of the starters that need to work together. We're going to get positive Tommy's reaction to this. Plus, we want your calls at 888-808-1019. Your first impressions of Mike Brown being introduced as the Knicks head coach, and if any other clips should materialize from the press conference that are worth listening back to. Of course, you want to keep it locked, WFAN, all day long, as we will play back clips and discuss the hiring of Mike Brown as the next Knicks head coach.